I'm a big fan of that program. My wife and I have done some work on the side with that program, advising some of their students. And that's the goal, is to teach journalists how to teach them the business end of the newspaper business, so they can either buy or start news products of their own. It's not all newspapers that are dying right now. And a lot of community newspapers in the right kind of community with the right kind of leadership, they may not be making as much money as they did 30 or 40 years ago, but they are surviving, and there are some that are even prospering.
Welcome to the News Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana Podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Town News. Town News delivers solutions, services, and guidance empowering local media organizations to thrive in an ever-changing digital world. Contact Town News today to learn more how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at townnews.com. Hello and welcome to the News Nirvana Podcast. I have with me two guests this time. This is my first multi-guest episode of the News Nirvana Podcast. Welcome Chad Stebbins, the Executive Director of the International Society of Weekly Newspaper Editors, and Gary Sosnicki, a former board chair and president. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. It's our pleasure to be here.
Now, I'm going to do a little full disclosure here. Chad, we go way back, and if anybody has problems with how I run the show or how I act as a journalist, it's all Chad Stebbins' fault. He was my advisor in college. He trained me to do or not do well the role. And Gary, you are also a former employee of Town News, who is my magnanimous benefactor for this podcast. So I just wanted to make sure all that was out there. Chad, I'm gonna start with you a little bit. Tell us what ISWNE is and who are you serving?
Well, again, we are the International Society of Weekly Newspaper Editors, ISWNE, or ISWNE, as some pronounce it, or ISWNE. We've never been able to agree on a pronunciation, so we say it three or four different ways. But we've been around since 1955. We were established at Southern Illinois University Carbondale by the head of the journalism program there, Howard Rusk Long. And he, in 1955, every summer, he would bring together a group of distinguished weekly newspaper editors for a summer meeting, usually around the Carbondale area. And these weekly editors that he invited were really a who's who of famous country editors, as they were called back then. And so Missouri Southern State University in Joplin has been the ISWNE headquarters since 1999. And we have about 300 members today. The majority are in the United States and Canada, but we also have members in the United Kingdom, in Ireland, in France. We have one in South Africa, a couple in Australia, one in China, and a handful in Nepal, believe it or not. Some of our Nepal members have recently started their own ISWNE chapter in Kathmandu.
How does that happen? How do they find out about you and decide this is the thing they want to be a part of?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's all about networking and word of mouth. And they've come to our conferences. I actually attended one of their meetings in Kathmandu in 2019. And so it's a great partnership. We're so proud of, you know, the first word in our name, international. You know, that we really can lay claim to members in these various countries. And so we're basically a support group for weekly newspaper editors who now need this type of support, I believe, more than ever. You know, these are very trying times that we're going through with COVID and just a general loss of revenue by so many papers. We're seeing newspapers close, and ISWNE provides a number of services. We publish a monthly newsletter. We publish a journal, Grassroots Editor, twice a year. We have an awards contest for editorial and column writing called the Golden Quill. We present other industry awards. And one of our neatest benefits, I think, is a hotline, an email hotline. If a weekly newspaper editor in, you know, rural New Mexico or Arizona has a pressing question or issue, they can post their dilemma on our email service, and within hours have, you know, sometimes a dozen or more responses from experienced editors how they would handle the same situation.
You said you're kind of a support group. You know, what issues, and we should note that you are, I'm assuming you are mostly small community sized newspapers. You're not the metros, you're not even bigger suburbans, right?
Correct.
So what issues, what things are you, do you think are the, I guess the big things that people are facing that this association can help out?
Well, there was a discussion on the hotline last night. It was a real simple discussion with a hard to come up with answer. One of our editors in Saskatchewan was called and notified of a parade that was going to happen in town on city streets, but also was told that they didn't want any publicity, and they didn't want anything in the newspaper about it. And it involved a person in the town who had completed cancer treatment. So he was getting all of this last minute advice from, I think there were 11 responses to it, how to cover it or not cover it. So that's the type of sudden issue that that we get on the hotline.
That's an interesting thing. And I think the first reaction is you got to wonder why would somebody not want attention on their parade?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a discussion, a public event. Was it a public event or is it a private event? Does it create a precedent if he does cover it? Because there are various parades in town that aren't official parades. So he was really confused about what to do. And I was looking this morning to see if there was any resolution to it, and I didn't see any resolution.
So those are the types of questions that our members post. And you have to remember that they're somewhat isolated in rural areas, and they're not sure who to turn to for that type of advice. And our members are, you know, fairly experienced and certainly willing to, you know, lend a hand, you know, with their opinions and support. And so it's a good sounding board. You know, if you have an issue in your community, it could involve advertising or circulation or editorial coverage, you know, how to handle a problem employee, anything. Literally, you can post that question to the hotline, and it is private, so only ISWNE members have access to the questions and the responses. But I think it's extraordinarily helpful, and it's often, we're often the first place that these rural editors turn to when they have such a dilemma.
Are you, I like that earlier you said, you know, you really like to celebrate and you're proud of the international aspect of the association. I'm curious, are those issues that rural and community papers face, does that translate around the globe? I mean, are they kind of the same things?
Well, we'll often get responses from our members in the United Kingdom on some of the problems in the United States and in Canada, or sometimes we'll get responses that say, well, in Canada, the situation would be like this. So yeah, it is an international discussion often.
Yeah, I just wondered if they were similar issues, I guess, that community papers face no matter where they are.
I think they are very similar. As Gary mentioned, the only difference might be, you know, with the legality of some issues. But often, you know, a problem in the United States is something they've dealt with in Canada and vice versa.
Are you seeing, you know, there's a lot of talk about news deserts, about small towns and communities losing their newspapers. Are you guys seeing that too? Have you seen that among your membership?
I'll let Chad answer that first, and then I'll respond.
Well, I would say not so much. I've only seen maybe one or two of our members closing up a paper. Usually they want to hang on for the good of the community. If a community loses its newspaper, it's just disastrous. And you know, the difference between the small weeklies that make up ISWNE and your larger metropolitan papers is, you know, our members just want to earn a living. You know, they're not looking for a 30% return to satisfy stockholders. They just want to keep the paper going and, you know, have enough money to support their family and maybe take a vacation once a year. So they do rely on the support of local advertisers. And in many communities, we see that the local advertisers don't necessarily donate ads, but, you know, they might place an ad when maybe it's not crucial that they advertise in the paper, just to kind of help the paper going. So if a community loses its newspaper, it's usually gone for good. There have been a few examples where someone has come in and tried to start up a paper when the old one has gone out of existence, but usually those cases aren't very successful.
Well, I think that was going to be my next question. If you had seen some new newspapers, news orgs come into towns and try to start up, and if they're looking to people like you, I guess for support.
We've heard from a couple of them, and usually if I hear about a new startup in a community, I will reach out to that person and offer them a complimentary 1-year membership. Our membership dues are only $60 annually. You know, I think very affordable, and so I kind of like to throw out this lifeline to these startup papers that here's an organization you probably haven't heard of. You know, and I pitched a hotline service, and you know, our newsletter and some of our other features, and then they do start talking to us, and you know, and the fact that we have 300 other members who are willing to share their expertise on almost a moment's notice.
Gary, looks like,
yeah, there have been some last minute rescues too of these newspapers that can't sell. I think that's one of the predicaments is you have older owners of newspapers, and I can think of one example here in Missouri that's occurred at the end of just recently at the end of the year, of a newspaper that closed down because the owner of over 40 years was unable to sell it. But in a town nearby, that there was a situation very, very similar to that a few years ago, and someone swooped in at the very last minute with a little help from the Missouri Press Association, someone with no real experience in the newspaper industry, and saved the newspaper. So you do have some last minute rescues, and from non-traditional owners, and hopefully that continues when you see cases like this.
What are some of the things that you guys are seeing that prohibit, I guess, or hinder some of these smaller newspapers? I mean, you've seen some that had to close after 40 years, or I mean, and some of that is just the cycle, but I mean, what are you seeing as things that are issues that they're facing now?
Well, in many of these communities, the population is moving away. Stores are closing as a result. Stores that used to advertise in the local weekly, those are real challenges. As Gary mentioned, some of these publishers have been in the business for 40 or more years. They're in their early 70s. They're wanting to retire. They're hoping to find a buyer for their paper. They're not getting offers or good offers. If they had sold the paper 15 years ago, they would have made a lot more money from the sale that they could.
And they wait too long. Yeah. Too many of them wait too long.
And so if they don't get a buyer, you know, they keep hanging on publishing the paper, but they're getting older and older. And some of them, you know, have tried to talk their children into taking over the paper. And in many cases, the children, you know, have seen what a hard life their parents have had, and they're not interested. And so it's a real dilemma. You know, in some cases they have to close the paper, but that's a blow to the community. And you like to see that your legacy would be carried on, the hard work that you've invested in the community. So, you know, there is a group in, at the University of West Virginia called New Start, that is, seeking to put, potential buyers, together with these retiring publishers.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that program. My wife and I have done some work on the side with that program, advising some of their students, and that's their goal, is to teach journalists how to teach them the business end of the newspaper business, so they can either buy or start news products of their own. So I like to quote this study that one of their fellows did last year, and he was a former Town News customer of mine. Actually, he's still a Town News customer, but Tony Baranowski, and I love this title: "Black and White and Undead All Over." And he talks to some of these are ISWD members who he quotes in this, that it's not all newspapers that are dying right now, and a lot of community newspapers in the right kind of community with the right kind of leadership, they may not be making as much money as they did 30 or 40 years ago, but they are surviving, and there are some that are even prospering.
The News Nirvana podcast is brought to you by Town News, the creators of IQ Audience Plus. IQ Audience Plus replaces your old school, one-size-fits-all paywall with a smarter metering solution that targets visitors with custom offers, converting drive-bys into paying subscribers. Learn more at townnews.com/audience.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we note, I like to push back a little bit, that you know, there's an overuse of the dying narrative, right? I think there's a lot of change. I started a local newspaper in the suburb where I am. There were already two print pieces, but one is virtually non-existent, owned by the area Metro, and we don't know why it actually still exists. And there's another one that's just not doing the job. And so I focus all on digital. So it's different. It's just a different kind of news packaging and news delivery. And I think there's a lot of changes that local newspapers are having to do to try to meet their audiences where they are.
Well, I think the newspapers that are going to succeed, and I'm talking about the small community newspapers, newspapers, you got to have local ownership. You got to have local ownership that is involved in the community, that provides community leadership, both through the newspaper but also be involved in other community activities. The town itself needs a sense of community. It's got to have a local school. The gym is packed on when there's a basketball game, and whether the team wins or loses, people are talking about the next day. That's what I mean by sense of community. Does the town have a local festival that there are a lot of local volunteers participating in, that people are coming from out of town? You know, that's another sense of community. A town's got to have a stable or growing population. It needs a stable business district that has a good mix of local and chain-owned businesses, with a good mix of young and older business owners, and preferably those that are active in the community and can make advertising decisions. So those are all factors that help a small-town newspaper survive in today's day and age.
Are they having to adjust how they package and deliver things, though? I mean, print is not easy or cheap anymore.
Yeah, but I don't think print is dead. I don't think print is dying. Yes, you have to be in digital, and that's something that I preached. I'm kind of proud that I think 2004 I don't remember if this was a Missouri Press Convention or a National Newspapers Association convention, but we had a speaker on talking about digital, and he said, "Well, nobody's making a profit from their website. Is anyone here making a profit from website?" And out of 100 people in the room, I was the only one who was raising my hand. And that's how I wound up getting a job with Town News when I sold my last newspaper, because I was making money and I could teach others how to do that. So yeah, you got to have digital. You got to do it correctly. You've got to have people who think outside the box. You can't do things exactly the same way that you did them 10 or 20 years ago. We have a paper here in Lebanon, Missouri. My wife and I were the publishers of it 20 years ago. We didn't own it, but we were the publishers, editors and publishers of it. And it was a 6-day a week daily. In the last few years, it has closed its printing plant. It is printing elsewhere to save money. That's reduced some payroll costs. It has reinvented itself as a twice weekly. The weekend edition is magazine style with a cover and a big center spread. The publisher, who is a friend of ours, does all kinds of special projects, both print and digital. There are niche products. I do some writing for some of the projects that it does. The print edition is just packed full of ads, and the website is packed full of ads. So yeah, you can be successful if you think outside the box and you're in a decent community that accepts it.
I think that goes back to, Gary, something you mentioned earlier about training people who want to start up or move in and keep these local papers going is that business side of it, being able to think outside the box.
Right.
You can be a great journalist, a great writer, reporter, whatever, but there's that other side of it where you've got to really lean in, and it takes effort and a different skill set.
You gotta know how to run your business, and you've got to be open to ideas. You got to participate in organizations like ISWNE and get ideas from other people. I learned a lot of things. I listened to a lot of things, we were successful with the newspapers that we owned, and we were successful with digital, and that was by just paying attention and learning and changing.
So what do you, and I guess Chad, you can jump back in on this, but what do you see as future of ISWNE? And by the way, I want to say that I'm a fan of ice wine. I'm voting for that one.
We took a vote at one of our conferences, and it was a rather contentious discussion with the three different pronunciations. People weren't going to give. If you've been saying it a certain way, you weren't going to change.
Well, I just think of it as you could have a winery sponsor your next convention and bring lots of wine for everybody. That's where my brain went. But Jetta, as you look to the future and how the organization association keeps growing and serving, you know, what do you see as further abilities to provide support, exchange ideas? Because we're all going to have to keep evolving, right? The way we produce the news in our communities.
Well, a couple of examples. In 2016, we launched an internship program for college students. And we have an arm of IceWine, the IceWine Foundation, that we co-fund several summer internships for college and university students. In fact, this summer coming up, we're doing a record 7, mostly on the West Coast, California, Oregon, Utah, even.
But Blind these country.
Are, yeah. These are ways for us to introduce community journalism to university students. And, you know, the majority, I think the vast majority of journalism schools these days are not teaching anything about community journalism. In fact, I'd go out on a limb and say they're not teaching much about journalism altogether. you know, they're into to podcasting and social media, and
podcasters are the worst.
Well, yeah, there is less of an emphasis today on, you know, writing, reporting, and editing, you know, how to gather information. And so with these summer internships, we introduced students to community journalism. These are 8-week internships. The students receive $10 an hour. They actually have to move to these rural communities in California, Oregon, Utah, or wherever, and find a place to live. And we've been doing this for 5 years now. And these students nearly all have said it's the experience of a lifetime, you know, doing this shoe leather type of reporting, getting to know people, interviewing people, sourcing stories, designing the page, getting feedback from the community. And, you know, we understand that these students aren't all going to go to work later on for community papers, but they get a good taste of what it's actually like. And it also provides a shot in the arm for these editors and publishers out there, you know, having a student come to them from a J school, and they can kind of see what the state of the industry is. And so that's been very successful for us. I think that we will continue to be a sounding board, a place where ideas are exchanged. I wanted to mention an example of one of our publishers in South Dakota. Jeremy Waltner is editor and publisher of the Freeman Courier in Southeast South Dakota, population 1,300. And this
excellent newspaper.
Excellent newspaper, one of the best in our organization. They win multiple awards in the South Dakota Press Association competition. But 1,300 people, you know, not that many businesses in Freeman to sustain a newspaper. And so Jeremy Waltner, the publisher, this year is trying a brand new idea. Instead of charging subscribers a flat $60 or $80 a year for a subscription, he is doing it on a contribution basis. What do you think the Freeman Courier is worth? What's it worth to you for a year? And the hope is that instead of paying $60 as they typically would, they might think, well, it's worth $300 to me. I'm going to write the courier a check for $300 because I know they need the income. And so we're kind of keeping our fingers crossed that this will be a successful venture and perhaps one that other papers might emulate. I think, too, the future of community journalism might be more of this type of model where people in the community make contributions to keep their local paper going. So as I said, once it's gone, it's gone. And then the people kind of say, well, why didn't we do more to support it, you know, when we could have? So I hope that works out for Jeremy. We'll keep you posted.
Well, yeah, I want to know the rest of that story, what happens with the Freeman Courier. And I would add on to that, and my time in the industry is obviously not as long as yours, Chad. But I would say we've never been good as an industry about tooting our own horn or about saying why we're valuable to a community, to make that ask, to say, you know, support what we're doing. And I think that's relatively new. You've seen a lot of papers around the country going to, you know, donation buttons or contribution buttons, and they've been somewhat effective. But it's so new because it's something I think we've been bad at as an industry for a long, long time.
Well, I agree. We kind of just think people know how valuable the community paper is. People take it for granted. Perhaps we need to do more to broadcast that type of message. Gary, you've got even more experience than I do in the industry. How do you think papers could do a better job of promoting themselves and what they offer to the community, and what would it look like if the paper disappeared one day?
Well, I've seen some papers that will go with publish a blank front page just as a promotion. no news today, and then explain on the inside why they did it. I don't have any great ideas on that. You know, my thinking is that you just have to publish as good a newspaper every week as you're capable of doing, and with the resources you have, that you've got to be very aggressive with your news coverage, that people are going to have to read your newspaper in order to know what is going on in the community. You have things working against you. You know, I think Facebook is the biggest competitor that newspapers have today. And everyone in a town thinks that they're a reporter now, because they're putting news up, they're putting photos up. And I see a lot of small newspapers that misuse Facebook, give away too much content for free.
That's one of the weirdest and I think most difficult problems with social media and promoting your news organization is, yeah, Facebook makes everybody believe they're a reporter, but it also gives a lot of stuff away for free. But at the same time, I'll just say this personally, well over 80% of my traffic is driven by Facebook.
Yeah, and that's the key, Nick. You've got to give away a certain amount. Your Facebook should be your teaser, and you should link to your website, because your website is where you're making money. You can monetize your website. You can't monetize Facebook except by driving traffic. And I see too many small newspapers that are trying to compete with the photo galleries and things that people are putting up on Facebook. People in the community are putting up on Facebook, and you just can't fall into that trap.
How do you think we can find that, or how could an association like Icewine, I'm gonna keep saying it, can help local papers find that balance? Because that's a tightrope to walk.
Well, the questions come up on Hotline, and I've done a few trainings for ISWNE through the years on the best practices for community newspaper websites. So it's just something that you have to keep pounding on.
Well, as we wrap up this conversation today, I don't want it to seem like we're doom scrolling, to keep it on social media, doom scrolling the industry, because I think it's not. And I know that, Chad, I've known you for a long time, so I know you love the community newspaper industry, and Gary, you've been a part of it for a long time. You know, so tell us from your points of view, you know, why the community papers play such a huge role in our, not just our communities, but I think in the society in general.
Well, Nick, let me say this first. My wife and I talk about this a lot. We would buy another weekly newspaper today if we were 15 years younger. We have that much confidence in the industry. There are a lot of bargains right now. There are a lot of newspapers that could be bought at reduced prices, much less than what we paid for our three newspapers at various times. We would do it all over again, because we're that confident that we know enough now that we could make a newspaper work again. So, you know, you've just got to be confident that this industry is going to survive.
Why do you say, I guess, what's your pushback there? Because I think that's a lot of what I try to do sometimes with this show, is kind of push back on some of those narratives.
Well, you've,
what is your pushback there?
You got to be in the right kind of community. You've got to be in a community, as I said, where there's a sense of community. I was asked once, probably 30 years ago, to put a newspaper in a nearby town that had lost its newspaper, actually in 1937. And it was on the fringe of our coverage area. And I looked at the town really carefully, and the school no longer was in that town. The school was across the county line. It was a consolidated school with another county. You know, that right there was, no, we're not going to do that. It's not going to work. Subsequently, one individual and one other small newspaper group put a put newspapers in there, and they both failed over time. And in my mind, because there wasn't a sense of community. So
can a newspaper create or even enhance that community?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is something we probably haven't covered enough, that our organization stresses good, solid opinion writing, that to have a role in the community, helping the community improve through editorials. The key event of each of our conferences is an editorial critique. And the editorial critiques can be pretty aggressive. And you learn so much from those, as I learned a lot from them back in the 90s. I'm a 40-year member of ISWNE. It's not ISWNE, it's ISWNE. And it's not ISWNE either. So I'm a 40-year member, but I learned so much in the early days. So you got to have a strong editorial page and provide that community leadership to improve your community. You've got to have a personality in the paper, which can occur through your editorial page and or a column, that kind of personal column, that kind of masquerades as an editorial page. And you've got to create a situation where the people in that town say, oh, I've got to pick up a paper. I don't know what that crazy Sosnicki has got this week, but I've got to see what he's writing about. That helps.
Do you think, and this is something I'm learning, and I think it's the right thing, but I'm curious what your thoughts on this. Do you think that in addition to having that voice and making opinion and analysis a regular part of your community news production, do you think that we have to reach out and engage more with our audience, with our readers, our listeners, than we have before? Because I kind of feel like for a long time, you know, here's the news, here's what we put together, you read it, and that's the extent of the relationship. But do you think we have to do more to invite them in?
I can't speak for myself, because I feel like Helen and I always did that. We were out and about in the community. We were at every single event. We were talking to people all over the community. Did we have meetings of readers? No, not on this particular paper. Although we've organized community meetings once to save a doctor, to bring a doctor back to town. So I can't speak to that personally any more than what I've said.
Well, Chad, as you're training, you know, you work and help train the next crews. What are you seeing?
Well, I think we have to continue reminding our students, our graduates, that there is no better way to gain experience than by working at a weekly, where you're not pigeonholed, where you get to do literally everything. And you know, we're not naive in thinking that journalism school graduates are going to spend a career working in the weekly field. But if they could do it for 2 years, some may find that they love it. That living in a small town and being in the center of all the action and activity, there's no better life. Others may want to eventually move to a larger city where there's more cultural opportunities, coffee shops and poetry readings, that type of thing. But the experience that you gain at a weekly just can't be beat. And many will go into public relations and other forms of communication, and the experience that you get interviewing, reporting, writing, editing, taking pictures, designing pages, selling advertising, handling circulation, customer service, it just can't be beat. And we have to continue to remind students to, you know, at least consider this type of journalism. It's a tough job market out there, even though there are a lot of job openings in the United States. Many of these are in the, you know, the food and service industry, and you know, a top level communications job is sometimes difficult to acquire right out of college. You need that experience. You need to build up that resume, that portfolio. And so that's one reason why we have the internship program, and you know, just encouraging students to maybe kind of take a step back and look at all their options, and working for a weekly it probably is going to be the hardest work you've ever done, but probably the work you're going to love the most.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would echo that, and I would say that even for the future of journalism, what no matter what size organization you're working in, right? Having that training at a small community paper where you have to do everything, where you learn a little bit of everything, really better prepares you, because what are we asking news producers to be now? We're asking them to be writers, we're asking them to be editors, photographers, videographers, talking to a microphone. You know, interviewing to write a story is a little different than interviewing this way, right? So I think people who have for the job are forced to do that are going to get, I think, be a little more prepared for all the things that we're asking journalists to do.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. No argument for me.
And I will tell you, Chad, my first job I got because of a community newspaper internship.
There you go.
Great.
That's the last time I give you credit, by the way.
No, I'll take it. I'll take it.
Dr. Chad Stebbins, Gary Sosnicki, thank you both for talking to us today. A little bit about ISWNE, or Ice Wine, if you want to be a rebel. I appreciate it.
Or there is a third pronunciation, Iswini.
Iswini. Okay. That's too hard. You didn't train me to say those kind of hard words. Guys, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it and hope we can follow up. I do want to know. I want to know what happens with the Freeman Courier.
We'll keep you posted, Nick.
All right. Thank you, guys. That will wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time.
The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Town News. Connect with Town News at townnews.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.